For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. And before I get into my typical diatribe with our toll-free number and the grassroots and so forth, let me thank you for tuning in. Let me thank you for calling and reaching out and following and being a part of the show. This show will not be able to be successful without you. I hope that we're not only relevant, that you actually recognize and you can embrace these solution-based ideas and perceptions that we're throwing out here. These are all constitutionally founded and they're academically asserted. You can always look at the founding documents and the documents that I cite for yourself. Read them for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Do the due diligence. That way you become an equally passionate member and constitutional warrior of the effort. Our toll-free number, so that you can call in if you have the desire, inkling to rant, is 844-320-4299. That's 844. So apparently they ran out of the 855-866-877-888 numbers. And so it's 844-320-4299. If you can't listen to this entire show on Wednesdays, if you didn't know, we are rebroadcasting this show on KSBN, the same channel, so you can stream it or listen to it on your radio every Saturday at 1 o'clock. So this entire show is rebroadcast on Saturday at 1. Many parts of these shows refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. So consequently, for you to be able to dovetail all of this information and make sense of this, you really need to download and become and familiarize yourself with all the different Federalist Papers and all the different documents that I'm going to be citing here. This way, it gives you a better understanding of what Reclaiming the Republic is and what Republic Review is. So don't forget that you can download these podcasts at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. So some local announcements, and I'll try to pronounce the local names here more accurately. The Spokane County GOP is hosting their Lincoln Day dinner. This is their big fundraiser for the year. And I don't know if they have any other fundraisers, but they should. And I'm trying to get other county chairmen and county parties involved in trying to have events for Constitution Day, and especially an event for Washington's birthday, November 11th. But back to the Lincoln Day dinner, I digress. You can get your tickets before they're gone. Their keynote speaker is Tommy Loren. A few seats are still available at the main table, and I have an inkling of buying one of those. So you could join me at the main table. Those seats only go for $756. You can also get a few seats at some really close, right up front tables, right off the main table. And those seats are available for $271 or $166. So it's far more reasonable, but you won't be able to rub elbows with Tommy, the county chair, and all the real important people of Spokane County. So grab that $756 seat is what I'm saying. Anywho, there are also a lot of seats that are still available at $86, which is the general seating area. And you won't be disappointed. So I'm hoping that you mark your calendar and come on down and become a part of the Spokane County GOP's fundraiser for this Lincoln Day dinner this year, and get active with your Spokane County GOP. My tongue is getting tied. So many liberties and sovereignties. Anyway, so hurry, get your seats while they're still available. I've got another save the date. I mentioned this last week. Saturday, June 24th, from 2 to 4 p.m., there will be a Spirit of America rally. And it's hosted by Spirit of America Rally, Eastern Washington, and North Idaho. June 3rd and June 4th is another event, and that is at Kootenai Fairgrounds. I think I got that right this time. And that's in Coeur d'Alene. And this is being held by the North Idaho Mineral Club, and it's their annual gem, jewelry, and mineral show. It's probably worth checking out just so you can go and look at fossils and some interesting things that would be available for sale. I do have a very important question for you, and if you saw my Facebook post this morning, it's basically this. Is religious freedom carte blanche? And what that means, carte blanche means, you know, full freedom. There's no encumberments. Is full carte blanche religious freedom a constitutional right? I want you to tell me. Do you believe that you can practice any religion, and the Constitution guarantees that you can practice any religion and do whatever it is you want to do? Again, no encumberments. And just call in, and I'm giving away a set of books for somebody that can call in and state their case that yes or no, whatever that is. I'm going to reserve my comment, but if you've listened to this show, you should probably kind of already understand what the constitutionality is of religious expression and religious freedom. So again, that phone number to call is 844-320-4299. We have a few lines on that number, and I'd love to see the producer go crazy with a few phone calls. So anyway, not that I'm really trying to create angst and anxiety in my producer's life, but anyway. All right, so believe it or not, because I've been talking a little bit about electronic appliances for your home, i.e. backup generators. And you probably wouldn't believe it, but this happens to be the National Electrical Safety Month. And so there's been several stories across the nation that's trying to, create safety awareness. And there's a lot of media press, because I've been mentioning this for the past few weeks, and I've been aware of this for years, but I think it's just becoming more and more promoted by the media that Mylar balloons can easily bring down a small part, or depending on what you hit, those Mylar balloons can bring down a part of the service grid. You can bring down people's electricity. And I believe that there have been cases like in Portland and down in San Bernardino and so forth. I can't believe they're all accidents. As a matter of fact, I did a little research, and I found out that Mylar balloons in the Phoenix area alone cause 80 outages a year. Is that just that big of a coincidence? Or are kids down in Phoenix kind of having some fun, like a little arsonist, without really hurting people other than causing damage and people losing their food and that type of stuff? Because I guess when you're down in 120 degrees and your refrigerator fails for a while, you probably lose your food pretty quick. But anyway, I look at all of these articles teaching people about not using Mylar, being careful with them, is the same thing as telling these anarchists, hey, if you use a Mylar balloon, you can actually tether it out to bring down the grid. And I just think that kind of information might be nice, but I don't think it's just important to probably give people fuel or ideas of how they can cause chaos or how they can affect people's lives in a negative or an adverse way. That being said, I am growing in sponsorships, and one of the sponsorships is the one that we've been working with for quite a while, in bringing in our appliance or our backup generator for our home. And so as you consider the need for that, just keep in mind that this is Electronic Safety Month and you may want to consider getting an appliance. That being said, I hear music. We're going to be right back. So please stay tuned and we'll get back into some constitutional issues. All right, are we ready to dig into the constitutional issues and or a historical look? What I'd like to do first, take a historical look at our Constitution, especially this time of year. As I try to tell people, this is the time of year where we have a very rich history of constitutional things that have happened. If you look at the Constitutional Convention, when did that kick off? Well, May 27th. If you look at the New York and the Virginia ratification debates, those happened and those kicked off. And those were key debates, not that Massachusetts wasn't and Pennsylvania wasn't. But these two were the killers because of the economic size of Virginia and the economic size of New York. Bottom line, Washington, Madison, and most of the framers acknowledged that if Virginia didn't ratify, or New York, one of those two, or if both of those didn't, then they were, even if they would have gotten all 9 or 10 states to ratify, without New York and Virginia, they would not have been able to succeed, just due to the amount of commerce that comes into New York and the amount of commerce that flowed out of Virginia as well as that flew in. But I mean, they were agricultural and they were raw materials flowing out of Virginia, but there were refined goods and other raw materials and so forth coming in and out of New York. New York was huge with our trade. Massachusetts, yeah, kind of, but it was still limited because getting all of that commerce from the South and so forth all the way up to Massachusetts just wasn't a palatable, a good idea. It wasn't a palatable idea. And so the Virginia ports and the New York ports were the two key areas for the success of the Constitutional Republic. So that being said, one other thing this time of year, as a matter of fact, it was just last week when James Madison stood up in the very first session of Congress and announced that he would be proposing the amendments for the Bill of Rights for the Constitution. When he stood up, I think it was May 4th, and he proposed that on May 25th that he would propose these amendments for review to the body of the whole. And there was a lot of debate on this. And it was a mere miracle that we got these Bill of Rights and that we even have these amendments. Had it not been for Madison and his fortitude and tenacity, your Bill of Rights, your religious freedom, freedom of speech, and those types of things would not be out on the table. And the funny thing is, when I talk to people about the Constitution, they usually know the Bill of Rights, but they don't know the Articles of the Constitution. So anyway, one other issue that I think was kind of paramount, or definitely everybody's talking about this, and I want to put it into a different context. Apparently, Trump had shared classified information with Russia, but who is the ultimate authority in determining what classified information can be waived, given, or shared with whomever? Well, that falls straight on the shoulders of the president. He is the commander-in-chief of the intelligence agencies and the executive departments. Well, he's not the first one that's done this, but the fact is that what he did for whatever purpose he thought was necessary. But I will say that he did not do this as an exchange for a quid pro quo, you do this and I'll do that, or anything like that. And I will tell you that we've had presidents that have done quid pro quo. And as a matter of fact, from April 1994 to February 1998, well, who was president then? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was Bill Clinton. Well, Bill Clinton received multiple deposits of soft money payments from the Chinese to the Clinton Reelection Fund, the DNC, and the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, and over that same period of time, the Clinton administration, after deposits were made, began allowing China to obtain our designs to stealth fighters. He gave them our investment of the Panama Canal, as well as our ballistic missile technology that came from the Loral Corporation. At that time, I think it just got bought out by Martin Marietta. So I knew a guy that was working there, and he said, well, maybe we should change our name to Low Morale. Anyway, all of this technology was given not because it was politically expedient, but it was necessary for the money, and the soft money specifically, to come into these campaigns so that he could retain his power. Now, I'm just not saying this. As a matter of fact, I am sharing this with you because MSNBC, the one source that you would never think had done this, were the ones that exposed this, and they made the direct connection that the Chinese were buying access to classified information from the Democrats and the Clintons by supporting their elections. Now, it's one thing to have a political need and or an alliance for whatever reason, for foreign affairs or what have you. But when you make a connection that somebody is paying to play, because that is the Clinton way, pay to play, there's no reason why the Clintons are not dragged back into a court for treason. If you look at the technology, if you look at the proof and the evidence, this should have been exposed. And as you look at this, and I'll give you the citation here, this was done by Curry and Windrum, and this was out in 1998. And if you want to email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, I will send you the congressional record where these guys made all the connections of all the different deposits to which accounts and all the technology that was given. And if you look, and some of this stuff wasn't even, you know, technology. If you remember, the Chinese wanted to buy the LA port. They wanted to buy some of our ports here. And the Clinton administration was just going to let it happen. Thank heavens for the conservative movement at that point and just being a reactionary force, because at least people called their Congress and said, are you kidding me? Letting an enemy own our ports and our throughput? Anyway. So if you want to see this and read this whole time, I mean, this is actually in my book. If you buy my first book, this is a good part of the Clinton's era as he was functioning as one of our kings. And it's in the String of Kings section of my book, because from Andrew Jackson to today, we've had nothing but a string of kings. We've yet to have a true president of the Constitution who is faithfully executing the laws and protecting and defending the Constitution. They're all doing shenanigans for their own benefit, for power, for whatever reason. And so we really need to get back to, you know, constitutional principles and getting a constitutional president. So that being said, and like I said at the beginning, when Trump took office, you know, I'm reserving my opinion and judgment on Trump. I do believe that he has some great opportunities, and I've pointed out too already, a Judiciary Act to reel in the judiciary, because that's been nothing but a problem. They've been legislating from the bench for two centuries. And secondly, having Congress step up and basically forcing the states, because it falls under their purview, as I told you last week, Congress can literally write an enforcement law that the president can literally enforce, that the states be Republican in form, and to move us away from democracy forms of government back to Republican forms of government. That's the Constitution. Anyway, so I know I've got a break coming up in about a minute, and there's been a viral conversation, or I should say a retort, to a town hall conversation. And this was out in Iowa, where allegedly a Barbara Rank attended a town hall meeting. And she, instead of speaking up, she just sent a little letter off to the editor that went kind of viral. And I'll get into that. And I'll actually read what she said, and then I will give you my take on this. Of course I'll give you my take, because that's why you're listening, because you want my take. I'm just kidding. So stay tuned. We'll be right back, and we'll take a good look at the Constitution, look for this week, and then get into the Federalist Papers. Thank you. Okay, we're back. And so I wanted to do a quick go back on the quid pro quo stuff. As a matter of fact, the Clintons weren't the only ones. The Obamas were huge in doing quid pro quo. They were definitely using business, or I should say contracts, and the public purse in paying off their loyalists and contributors for their campaign and so forth. And I mean, there was no expense, or I should say there was no limit to your expense, that they would throw this country into deeper debt to make sure that they were able to pay off their loyalists and contributors and so forth, such as Kaiser at Solyndra and a lot of those green energy companies that they sent money to. Anyway, a quick constitutional look at something that has actually happened this week. And I talked about this article is on Facebook. So you have to question what's true, what's real, what isn't true. And so supposedly a Barbara Rank attended a town hall meeting in Iowa where Republican Representative Rod Blum was out there, and he was questioning the Obamacare requirement for men to have to pay for pregnancy insurance. She probably didn't expect what she was going to put out there to go viral. And I'm kind of reading what has been out there. This is, I think, something I'm reading from Newsmax, but almost all of them are copying this, whether it's an AP post or what have you. Anyway, Rank didn't speak at the town hall, which had many hecklers and protesters against Blum's support for the new health care bill, which just passed in the House. But she later wrote down her thoughts and sent them to her local newspaper, the Telegraph Herald. In response to Blum's question, Rank wrote, and the question again was, why should men have to pay for pregnancy, health care insurance, or what have you? More specifically, pregnancy insurance, maternity insurance. And then she wrote, why should I pay for a bridge I don't cross, a sidewalk I don't walk on, a library book I don't read? Why should I pay for a flower I won't smell, a park I don't visit, or art I can't appreciate? Why should I pay the salaries of politicians I didn't vote for, a tax cut that doesn't affect me, or a loophole I can't take advantage of? And then her sardonic or sarcastic retort was this: it's called democracy, a civil society, the greater good. That's what we pay for. And the interesting thing is, and just like this whole Trump thing, I've heard lots of conservative hosts talk all sorts of issues about this, but they didn't put it into context of, yeah, the president can do this, but when you have a president doing this for money, then that is an egregious violation of the law. A quid pro quo is unethical and immoral and illegal. In this context, and on this, and why I'm not hearing any conservative, because they're not constitutionally grounded, did you find anything wrong with her statement or what I just said, that this is a democracy and this for the betterment of society? To me, this alleged assertion by her is just another indictment against our secular progressive education system and proof of how effective the inculcation or brainwashing of the citizens has occurred in our republic since they've monopolized our progressive education system and the narrative within it. Apparently, Ms. Blum and all of mainstream media does not know the facts. Our form of government is not a democracy. It is called a Republican form of government in the Constitution at the state level. And I will tell you that it is a hybrid constitutional republic at the national level. Based upon an enumerated constitution at both the federal and the states. What does that mean? That means that the constitutions where the people have surrendered a given or delegated a amount of sovereignty to the states, and the states have surrendered a level of sovereignty to the federal government in these enumerations. These enumerations are a list of powers that are delegated. If it ain't in the Constitution, then it's unconstitutional. And everything she listed, and I'll go back. Why should I pay for a bridge I don't cross? Well, that where in the Constitution does the federal government have the ability to build a bridge? They don't. Why should I, you know, pay for a book I don't read? Well, the federal government doesn't have any enumerated powers of maintaining libraries or buying books. Why should I pay for a flower I won't smell in a park? Show me in the Constitution where the states have delegated the federal government to maintain, manage, and regulate parks. That it's very specific on what land they can regulate, and that is only for military purposes and for general administrative needs of the government. That is it. All this EPA stuff, these national parks, those are all unconstitutional. So going back through what her arguments are and all of these things she's talking about, even health care that she's trying to defend, that's why we do it? No. They've been getting away with it because she believes and everybody else believes we're a democracy. And as long as we can vote for it, we can do this. And that is the fallacy. They don't have the legal grounds to be able to do this. And until the states wake up, they're going to be continuing to get away with this and making these egregious mistakes at our expense. What we have to do is we have to call the federal government out on the rug as the inferior government in exercising powers that have never been formally delegated through the Article 5 process. It's that simple, folks. It's called an audit and what I call a convention for republic review. Read my executive summary. It's out there. Furthermore, each state is also required to be Republican informed government as well, and not a democracy per the Constitution. These states also have enumerated constitutions, as I have stated. The reason this is so incorrect, and the reason this has gone viral, because it supports the progressive paradigm and the fact that no one is calling out this blatant and false assertion and is actually being lauded as a common person shutting down an evil conservative. It just boggles my mind. I cannot fathom how we've gotten this so far off the mark. And that's just because we've got the effective education system that is withholding the truth and teaching you what they want you to believe. When in fact, this person is basing their perspective on an imbecilic narrative that is based on these progressive lies. What do we do? I mean, as a society, as you listening, what do you do about these progressive lies? Well, this is what I say you do. You have to challenge every piece of information within the mainstream media is incorrect. More importantly, look at what they say as blatantly false. Just call them out at it. Everything they say is blatantly false in every facet, especially when they try to speak about our government and what our government can do or should be doing, because they're not talking about the Constitution and what the government or what the Constitution limits them. They want you to believe this is a democracy. Oh, yeah, we should be able to take your guns. We should be able to do whatever we think is best because, you know, we're the government and we know better and we have all the power. No, we've never given them all that power. They've assumed and usurped it. And if you don't see the danger here, folks, if you don't see the reality that there's nothing that's going to stop them from coming in and going into your home, setting up a department of babysitting and basically regulating your parenting, they're going to regulate every facet of our lives because that's the true form of communism and that's where they want to go. For starters, we have never been a democracy. And when someone tries to assert this, we must immediately correct them. Until we correct the narrative and the fundamental facts, they will continue to lead us down dangerous pathways. And each time and each effort is designed to steal or convince us to surrender our liberties and our sovereignty. The end goal is to discard the Constitution for political expediency, and you'll no longer have your rights, your Bill of Rights, your privileges, your immunities, and the government will do whatever they think is best because they know better. And that is not the government that the framers instilled. That is precisely the government they fought off. And if you compare what was happening before the Revolutionary War and you compare to what's going on today, what the heck's happened? Somebody's been peeing in the gene pool or something, because it has been watered down to nothing. We've allowed them to walk all over us. And as Americans, we should just be disgraced. I apologize for the rant. But I will say this, that if you tune in and just listen to the last segment, so stay there. We'll be right back after this break and we'll get into some Federalist Papers. Thank you. All right, so thank you for sticking in there. We can't do it without you. If you've ever heard of the cycle of democracy or why democracies fail, and just in this whole line of this Mrs. Bloom, the mainstream media, and this whole perception that we're a democracy, I want to close on this. If you're familiar with the quote that's attributed to Alexander Fraser Tytler around the time of our republic founding, then you'll already know this. But I will also say this, to be clear, what Tytler asserted, this concept of democracy and why they fail, was not a unique perspective. And what is more important to know is that if you read most of the framers' comments, such as the Federalist Papers, and some of their other arguments regarding democracy during the very first Continental Congress, when John Adams wrote about it must be a republic. He wrote a really great long article about why our government form needed to be a republic. It was very common knowledge to the framers and all of the statesmen of the time, Edmund Burke, all of these men, as a matter of fact, even the economist Adam Smith, understood the dangers of democracies. And they realized, their failure was the ability to vote in whatever it is you want. And so let me kind of get into what Tytler's perspective, and I'm sure you've heard this before. A democracy, this is attributed to him, so this is the quote: a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse money from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. The average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. Now, this is absolutely true, and this is absolutely playing out here in our republic because you believe that this is a democracy. However, everything that is happening is a violation of our government and our founding documents and our governing documents. It's all a violation. It is very clear, and as I've gone through these Federalist Papers, and I'll get into this in just a quick second here, all of these things that they are doing are direct violations. The only way the federal government can issue healthcare or administer healthcare or, you know, build roadways, bridges, and these types of things, administer and oversee and regulate energy. All of the things, if you look at the executive departments out of the 15, 12 of them are unconstitutional because they're exercising powers that have not been formally delegated. And the only way the powers can be formally delegated is through the Article 5 process, where the states ratify amendments, and that's how the states delegate and formally give that power, role, or responsibility to the federal government. So as a reminder, before I get into the federal, so I'm closing on that, that's it. You understand that referring to our government, it's just going to get the hair on the back of my neck to stand up. And if you call our government a democracy, I am probably going to say, no, we are a Republican form government. Anyway, so if you personally know me and you want to annoy me, that's all you got to say. As a reminder, I have another book giveaway to any caller who wants to call in. And for anybody to basically tell me how the U.S. Constitution guarantees the freedom of religion and what that means. You know, does that really mean that any religion can be practiced here because of the Constitution? Again, our number to call is 844-320-4299. Now, if you have an opinion on this, please call. You know, who knows? I could be wrong. It hasn't happened yet this year, but I could be wrong. Anyway, so before I get into my first citation, and I apologize for all the ranting, but I'm just trying to clarify all this improper stuff and all these falsehoods that are being told either by the press and even by these conservative entertainers you're listening to, like the guy that I'm competing with in time space right now. He wants to rant about Israel and, you know, other little things. Those things aren't important. Let's get compliance to the Constitution first. So please ponder this. As I read this next Federalist paper, are these the words, these founding documents that I'm citing here, are these words, the words of deceit that have been clearly documented for us, or are these words, or are the words that we have been taught by the education system and the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, and even the mainstream media, are their words the lies and deceit that we can't trust? Who can we trust? The framers or all these people that are telling us what, you know, what the truth is, what things are defined, and, you know, what the government can do and what it can't do? Who do we believe? And who can we trust regarding our Constitution? As a quick snapshot, what I covered the last time I covered the Federalist Papers, I covered Federalist Paper 48, James Madison, paragraph 16, where he was talking about a mere demarcation on parchment of the Constitution limits the several departments is not sufficient guard against those encroachments. In other words, state legislatures needed to do far more than just create or count on these demarcations on parchment. The other Federalist paper was Alexander Hamilton. It was 78, paragraph 16. The courts of justice are to be considered as bulwarks of a limited constitution against legislative encroachments. And I'm going, really? I think that was a straw man argument that he was stating. But I think he was just looking at things with, you know, rose-colored glasses. And the other one, in the last time I read this Federalist Papers, it was the supposed danger of the judiciary encroachments on the legislative, which have been many in occasions reiterated, is really a phantom. And again, this is Hamilton supporting the legalese, and I think was helping them create a foundation to where they could start undermining, because he was truly a part of the undermining later. But he was basically trying to quell everybody's concerns that the judiciary can't do all of these things. And look, it's doing exactly what they said it wasn't supposed to do and wasn't going to do. So the next Federalist paper is Federalist Paper number 85, Alexander Hamilton, paragraph 13. And this is what he says. We may safely rely on the disposition of the state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority. If the foregoing argument is a fallacy, certain it is that I am myself deceived by it, for it is, in my conception, one of those rare instances in which a political truth can be brought to the test of a mathematical demonstration. In other words, he's basically saying that we should safely rely on the state legislatures to erecting these barriers. But I believe, again, Hamilton knows that the nature of man is lazy. He should have known that. Who doesn't know that people are naturally lazy? So if you really look at what he's saying, I think he was just basically, again, trying to quell concerns. And I don't think his argument held good water. But he was pointing out that we should be able to rely on the state legislatures. But the fact is they didn't do any protections. They did not create any protections in ensuring and trying to go in and going, hey, look, federal government, if you think you're going to get away with something, we're going to be auditing you on a regular basis. Had the state stepped in and said, hey, you know what, every 5 years, every 10 years, we want to look at what you're doing and make sure that, you know, you've amended the Constitution on all things not delegated. This Federalist paper, number 85, also speaks about the Article 5 process, and this is Hamilton's response to these worrisome efforts. I believe Hamilton used other strawman arguments as a ruse here. I believe he was fully aware of the nature of politicians, as I was saying, that they are lazy like everyone else and self-serving, and that they would focus their efforts on increasing their power and not preserving states' authority and position. Well, so I got one Federalist paper done this week, and I have a whole bunch more, and we're going to get into some other Madison writings and the ratification debates. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, and unfortunately, I still have you, so please tune in next week, and we will get more into the Constitution and more in what you can do and how you can help. I appreciate you. Thank you. Stay tuned, and God bless.